let me tell you people, hey, revolution rising. Yeah, yeah. Proof. Yes. Watch out. Yeah. Giving us the run around. They're giving us the run around. Don't think that we're too happy in this world of material things. Don't think that we're lost in some cyberspace. They think we can't find a way to blaze a light. Tell them we're about to burn these plantations down. They're giving you the run around. Giving us the run around. Giving us the run around. Giving us the run around. So when you think you know what.
All right. The run around. You might have recognized the trombone of Fred Wesley. Fred Wesley, as you may recall, was the trombonist of James Brown's band. And also we heard from Anthony Joseph from my little country, Trinidad. He lived quite a while in London as well. He's a poet and a singer and a wordsmith. And together, they put this number called Runaround. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And we are picking up from where we left off with each other just yesterday. Well, as it happens, it's the eve of the big election. And we'll talk about that. What is your state of mind as you contemplate? I don't know if you're going to go vote or you decided that you will abstain. Whatever it is you do, one of the things that you have to consider is how you're feeling about this idea. We've been told, everybody's told, voting is the ultimate civic duty. And that's what millions of Americans already have done, and millions more will do tomorrow on Election Day. But I could promise you this, after tomorrow, there will be no quick and no smart fixes, not for this election. It's just not going to happen. You should disabuse yourself of that notion right away. Whatever the results of the presidential election, one thing's for sure, it won't be over and done with for many, many years to come. Systemic failures of elections and national policies prior to election 2020 are compounded by the new ones that are about to happen and that are already happening and that are deep within the fabric of American life and law, and they are far-reaching. Fixes are neither easy nor politically doable. Rabid bipartisanship has killed what we used to call consensus. That no longer exists. It's either this or that, Republican or Democrat, whatever it is. You can be sure there is no effort to arrive at a consensus about anything. So, as in many other areas of our lives, the people must take on a larger share of the responsibility for confronting and solving problems that plague them and the communities they live in. That's going to happen also as of tomorrow. You'll get a sense of where this nation is headed, if it's headed anywhere good. But you will get, more importantly, a sense of new mandates for all of us. What is it that we will be asked to do, or we will feel ourselves compelled to do by virtue of the results of the election, which we won't know for some time? We are in a very precarious moment. Nobody has to tell you that. But the thing is that there is a chance here, just the same. As abysmal as things are, there is a chance that we can get something out of it that comes close to what we've been waiting for and hoping for. But that requires us to do it. We have to do it. We should completely dispel the notion that government, as we understand it, and as we have been living with it, that government is the answer to what it is we need. And particularly in this administration, the Trump administration, government has been exceedingly antithetical to progress for the masses of people. So we shouldn't grieve if we find ourselves without it after the votes are counted. Because whether they win or don't win, what I'm saying is we should concentrate more on the challenge that we have. And we have had it for a long time, and we haven't done well with it at all. And that is seeing to our interests as a community that is far more sensitive to our needs than the government is. And fashioning some logical or reasonable way to respond. This is the challenge before us. It's not whether the Democrats win or the Republicans win. We are so beyond that now. And we have been for a long time, except we really haven't acknowledged it. We haven't admitted it. And worse, we haven't done anything about it in order to suggest to ourselves, well, this is what we can and should do. And to set about the task of putting it together, so that we have something organic to us that is a point of coalition for us. We can fashion in many ways a response, a cogent, logical, smart response to the many dilemmas that we face and that threaten us every single day. We cannot continue the way we have been living as a nation. We have to fashion new ways of doing things, but that requires new ways of thinking about things. We are not used to the idea that we should think for ourselves, or that we can even. We're not used to the idea that we can be in charge of our own destinies. This is a good time to examine that. And better yet, it's a good time to embark upon that notion that we should take more responsibility for fashioning our own destinies ourselves. That is not to say we let the government off the hook. Not at all. But we can't argue that we've been on the negative side of government for way too long. We have to deal with the consequences of insufficient action, uneducated action, racist action. We can correct it. It's not impossible to do. But we also have proof that we are unwilling to do so. We are not enthusiastic about picking up the gauntlet and fashioning our own response, finding our own solutions that will work successfully and that would give us a more advantageous position in our society as a whole. That is what I'd like us to talk about today. In terms of what this election will mean as of tomorrow, when the results are in, most of them anyway, and there's a picture as to what the immediate future holds. What are you hoping that the future would hope for all of us? What is possible? And how do you see a new possibility that considers all the things that we have to make up for? Is it possible we can take it on and execute on the plan and make it work? Is it possible that we can create out of this craziness something called a community of interest, a physical community in which we feel a lot safer, there's a greater sense of belonging because it reflects our understanding, our culture, our needs? Or am I being way too optimistic, delusional even? Is there a chance that we can move in that direction? We may not succeed outright, but is there a chance we can move in that direction? What has to happen, you think, for that movement to occur, for people to understand, because they have direct contrast now, and we've had it for the last 4 years, with a threat of 4 more years. What is it that needs to change, that we can change, to create for ourselves new possibilities, even within this turmoil, this craziness? What has to change, do you think, if we can realize some kind of change ourselves and be the directors of that change, the people powering that change. Do you see that there's any possibility of that happening? Or do you think it's pretty much useless to attempt? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's try that out and see what we get from a conversation based on these premises, if we get close to an idea. But I do that, I suggest this as the alternative to the first question I raised about the contention that voting is the ultimate civic duty. 888-874-4888. Let's hear what you're thinking today. I'm always fascinated to hear your organic feelings and thoughts. We don't get very much of that in radio. We get people yammering, or we get people being talked at or talked to. I'm always fascinated by what people are thinking. So tell us what you're thinking about this particular question, this particular subject today. 888-874-4888. In the meantime, keep monitoring to see what new developments are coming down the pike as we get closer and closer to the magic hour. And we'll see how this all works out. Whether we would get 4 more years of Donald Trump, or whether we'll get 4 more years of quasi. Because, you know, I was talking with somebody today and saying, I know there is said to be a difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. I'm sure there is some kind of difference. But from where I'm standing, I can't tell whether that difference is strong enough to get us over the hump. This is on the part of Biden. We don't know. It's an awkward time because usually at election time, the choices are quite stark. For me, they're not. They're not stark. They're not stark enough. And so I am very uncomfortable with saying, well, this person is better than that person, because I'm not judging it on the basis of a qualitative thing, you know, whether the person is qualitatively better or worse than the other, the opponent. I'm thinking in terms of what the possibilities of change would be, and whether Biden can pull it off, whether Biden is sufficiently equipped to take on the challenge of what is needed, whether people will actually make demands, whether people can move their feelings aside and look clinically at the situation and decide whether there is enough conviction that what they're looking for is there. All right, so we're waiting you. We are awaiting you at 888-874-4888. It's not a typical question, but it is an important question. Once we get into it, you'll see why. So let's figure out about tomorrow. I'm putting together my own table of response. We'll see on how many counts we agree with what is going on or not tomorrow. But trust me, this isn't over at all. It's in many ways just starting. And we have to measure what is happening against what we believe ought to be happening. I don't think we've gotten enough information or sufficient answers on that count. It's been a wait and see kind of situation, so we wait and see. But in the meantime, I have no illusions, none whatsoever, that anybody so far coming before us is the answer. I'm not convinced about that. However, I am convinced that if we get our act together, we are certainly capable of being a strategic part of the answer, and so we should do that. Bill from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon, Bill. How are you?
Good, good. I think that regardless of who wins tomorrow, and who knows if we'll even know if who wins tomorrow, the main thing is something that you've talked about for a long time. It's self-preservation. You need to have your own plan how to take care of you and yours, you and your family. And regardless of who the president is, I'm always going to do that. That's why it doesn't matter to me who the president is. I'm going to take care of my family regardless. And as far as my life is concerned and my children's life is concerned, the president is meaningless. The government of our life is myself and my wife. We are the government. We take care of our welfare. We take care of what needs to be taken care of. And the government is a complete non-issue. Self-preservation, do for self. That's my plan.
Some might say you're being unnecessarily close-minded and you're not seeing the big picture. What do you say to that?
Well, the big picture in my world is the welfare of my children. Nothing comes before that. Nothing is meaningful until that is taken care of. That gets taken care of, then my attention can be moved on to other things. So big picture surrounds those children, and I think more parents should look at it that way. Take care of yours first. Take care of yours first. Don't expect the government to take care of them, because they won't. Just on the premise that the president is responsible for 200,000 deaths and he didn't take care of our health. I don't expect a president to inform me how to be healthy. Why would I? I mean, one, they lie, all of them. Two, they're not particularly healthy. And have shown no history of being trustworthy. Now, will I take my cue from a Gary Knoll, someone who has shown himself to be trustworthy and knowledgeable and is himself healthy? Absolutely. But I don't sit and wait and have a president tell me, here's what you need to do to protect yourself. Here's what you need to be healthy. He's not healthy.
You pass on that.
Yeah, I pass on that
advice.
Someone that's not healthy is going to tell me how to be healthy? I don't think so. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. So I don't put that on his back.
Thank you for getting us started today. Thanks for contributing. Denise from New York, you're on the air. What are your thoughts? Hi, Denise, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. It's my first time calling, and
welcome to you.
Yes, I listen to your show every now and then after Gary Noll, who I listen to regularly. So I wanted to say that I think that the first order of business is the COVID. I don't think we're going to be able to really move forward into other orders of business without dealing with the whole COVID thing. And from my perspective, the two candidates have completely distinct approaches to this whole thing, the COVID thing. I think that Biden is going to handle it one way and Trump is going to handle it a different way. And so I'm voting for what is in the immediate near future, as opposed to the agendas for the long term. I am very, very eager to get back to a normal, as normal as we can make it, which is in alignment with Trump's agenda. I, you know, Biden at the last debate promised a dark winter. He's said that he will have lockdowns if he's advised that way, and he has suggested that he will have mask mandates. So that entire agenda, closing down, shutting down, you know, mandates. That's if we go in that direction, we're going to have one way of living for the next couple of years that doesn't even allow us to deal with other matters.
Have you ever been
matters?
Have you ever had to deal with a pandemic? Have you ever had to live through one?
I don't think any of us have that are alive today. I mean, in terms of like a real...
People have gone through yellow fever, measles,
right. Mm-hmm.
Many diseases that caused a national crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the issue of wearing a mask is a national crisis?
The issue of wearing a mask.
Should it cause a national crisis?
Does it cause a national crisis? Well, it's not.
Should it cause a national crisis when suggested that in moving around other people and being in contact or close contact with other people, this should be a form of protection, not just for yourself, but also for other people.
Right. There is lots of science pro-mask, and there's lots of science that don't support masks.
Your personal view. Do you think the issue of wearing a mask should cause a national crisis?
I'm not sure what exactly you mean by that. And I really actually don't want to harp on the mask thing, because it's just a component of the entire agenda involving also lockdowns. And as Biden put it, a dark winter. You know, what does he have in mind for us?
So it's a dark winter, but it still is a response of sorts to the idea that we are facing, according to the public health experts, we are facing a dark winter. Dr. Fauci has already said several times we are headed in the wrong direction. And that from the leading expert that the United States has on infectious diseases, is not to be dismissed.
Right. Well, the thing is, you know, I listen to Gary Noll, but he's not the only one I listen to. I listen to many, many doctors and scientists who do not agree with Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci is is held up to be this, you know, amazing voice of reason and, you know, science. But there's a lot of problems there, and there's a lot of censorship going on right now where doctors and scientists
are censored with being an expert on the expert.
I'm sorry?
Are you comfortable about being an expert on the expert on this question?
I'm not an expert.
To mitigate the devastation that they're saying will occur.
Mm-hmm.
Temper it down. It's not about taking your rights or taking your life or anything like that.
That's your perspective. But there are many who do feel that mask mandates are an imposition on our freedoms. And in a certain sense, they are. No one really can tell you what you have to put on your face. They're actually edicts. They're not laws. And
discussing masks, but you keep ignoring the context in which we're discussing the issue
of
masks.
I brought up lockdown, masks, and a dark winter.
We are in the middle of a pandemic.
Well,
how would you have suggested that the country respond before thousands of people died?
I would like to suggest that the listeners look into the Barrington Declaration. This is a petition that's out that's got the signatures of a huge number of scientists and doctors.
This is not the time for you to suggest what people ought to do. You would be doing exactly the same thing you condemn, which is people should be free from your suggestions.
Mm-hmm. They don't have to be free from it. It's just a suggestion.
People to think or rethink their position on this question. And this is answered the question so far.
What's your question?
Would you have recommended in place of a mask? How would you have recommended that the public acutely vulnerable to the transmission of these organisms that are fatal and causing a pandemic, the reason it's a pandemic is it's happening all over the world. So it's a mass contagion. How would you have suggested, what would you have suggested to respond differently?
I have suggested, just as those who support the Barrington Declaration suggest, which is normalcy. Normalcy for the mass majority of us who are healthy, and protection for those who are frail, for those who are vulnerable, and for those who need that protection. Absolutely, and all of the resources go in that direction. But you don't lock down an entire country. You don't lock down
world. You have to take drastic measures to save life.
This
is one of the things that people are getting so dogmatic about, and it's, to me, so straightforward. If you, in your household, if you have children, one has measles, but they sleep together in the same bed. What are you telling me? You will allow them to continue sleeping in the same bed, expecting that the other one would not get infected?
Right. Well, you make my point, actually, because what you do is you have the one who's sick quarantined in the bedroom. You take care of them.
Let them go on living as normal. Not quarantining anybody. You maintaining
that quarantining
what you just
is a strong word.
Normalcy.
You just take care of them.
And normalcy in your household would be the two children continuing to sleep together in the same bed.
Of course not. You protect the vulnerable, you protect the sick, you protect the weak, you let everybody else carry on as normal, because small businesses are being destroyed, Yatrice Leed, and that means that that is a health crisis as well.
All right. Well, we have a fundamental disagreement.
Serious one. Oh, we do, indeed.
I'm not going to dissuade you from the way you wish to say.
Well, you wouldn't be able to. I've done a lot of studying about it.
Pardon me for speaking while you're interrupting.
I'm sorry.
Okay. You have your way of interpreting our current reality, and that's
so
fine by me. But I don't believe that you should at the same time say, well, what you believe is silly. What you
I'm
believe
not saying that.
Science
yeah.
does not support. Science
oh,
does
I'm
not,
not
support.
Saying that, yeah. I'm saying let's be open to doctors and scientists who have an alternate point of view. It's really, really important. And we're not doing that in this country because of big tech and media. And what the media is doing is really almost criminal to what they're doing.
And now you're entering a whole different universe.
Of course, but that's what it's about.
I'm not going
the media is who informs us.
Again, you're interrupting me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. We'll talk another day.
Thank you for listening, and I really appreciate it. Be well.
Thank you for calling in. Patrick from Florida, you're on the air. Okay, you're not on the air, Patrick. Why? Okay. We have people who are supposed to be on the air when they say they're on the air. Denise from New York. Did we just talk to Denise? David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm going to get right to your original question. No matter who wins tomorrow, whether it's Trump or Biden in the fight in the Uniparty for the presidency, there's one thing that is absolutely positively for sure. The people lose. Whichever one of those two slugs wins, the people lose, and there's not going to be any change. Those who rule and have the power, like this people that run the place, the oligarchy, they don't just give up power. There's nobody that's viable that can win any presidency as long as the oligarchy stays in power. So that's the way I see it. Now, I agree with you very much so when you talk about local things. And that's what I do a lot of. I talk about it in Brother David from Brooklyn Speaks on YouTube. You do local things, like trying to improve your neighborhood, trying to do local things that you can do yourself. You will never have the change you need by simply voting. It's not going to work, and it's something like wishful thinking. You know, you have to do much more. You have to be much more of an activist on the local level and a national level, state level. It's not just voting, because the system that's in effect in this country is in the hands of the oligarchs at all levels. And you got to understand that and stop wishing that, I'm going to go for one because Biden is not Trump and all that. And just putting off what you need to do. And I'm not trying to tell people who to vote for. So we got to think about the real problem here, and we're in a system that doesn't work in any way that it should for the benefit of the people who live here. Or we wouldn't have people walking around hungry. We wouldn't have people who are homeless. We wouldn't have all the suffering that people have to go through to get food stamps and all kinds of things. At the same time, the ruling class, the elite, the oligarchy are on welfare. They are on welfare. They are on welfare. And what's going on with people like Trump and Biden and whatnot, they're pointing the finger at, scapegoats. All this talk is about scapegoats and nonsense about law and order in a country where law and order was never in effect for those thousands and thousands of black people who were murdered by lynch mobs and whatnot. So all this is nonsense. People have to get it through their head that the system is not working. It will not work. And they're not going to give up power easily. And this voting will be not enough.
Well, thank you, David, for your opinion today. Thanks for contributing. Duke from Jersey City, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Trees. How you doing?
Okay. How are you?
Not doing that great, but I'm gonna say my piece, and then I'm gonna let other people call. You know, I want to address what your question was in the beginning, because we kind of got off the whole thing. You said, "What should we do?" Considering that no matter who wins this election, we still going to be in the same situation. And you're absolutely right about that. And what we need to do as a community, or let's say a group of people that share the same skin color, because that's basically what we're talking about. We're talking about a group of less than 15% of this country who are people of dark skin. What we need to do has already been laid out for us over and over and over again.
But I didn't limit it to
Sorry?
Color, not at all.
No, it's not limited to color. But in terms of the community that you have on this program, we are talking primarily at the core about black people. And then we expand out because we know the black community is the most inclusive community.
But that's not what I talk about. And I don't have it as the center of what I talk about. I talk about issues. Certainly, I'm aware, because I am a black person myself, I'm aware of the unique challenges confronting African Americans and Caribbean Americans, people of color generally. But that's not my exclusive focus at all.
Okay, that's fine. So let me take that away then. It doesn't have to be based on color. It's progressive-minded people, basically, is what we're talking about. It doesn't make a difference. The way forward has been laid out for us by so many other people. I mean, if you just take, for example, I'll just give you an example. If you just take locally, right? If you take some of the grassroots movements that are here on the Northeast, let's say I'm in Jersey City, right? So in Newark, you have the People's Organization for Progress. I know you're familiar with them.
Yes.
Headed by Larry Ham. And then down south, you got Reverend Barber's group, the Poor People's Campaign, right?
Yes.
And then you got bigger groups, like, let's say, the Nation of Islam. And then we have a Congressional Black Caucus. We need to get all of these groups together okay, to have some type of convention. Now,
well, we've been
the groups
down this
that I just
many,
named
many.
Are primarily...
We've been down this road many times, and things may or may not happen, but not sustained.
Correct. Correct. It's never sustained. And that's why we're still in the problem that we're in. And we are going to remain in this problem. I mean, it's like a, you know, a dog chasing its tail. There's no way out of it. You can fix things in your little local community. But, again, like the first caller, Bill, was saying, about all he cares about is his family. Well, I respect that. But, Bill, we're looking at the big picture. We're not just looking at your family. We're looking at what's best for progressive-minded people in this United States. We're not looking at Bill's family. So that's a narrow way
Bill's
of thinking
point.
About it.
I think it's Bill's point. Bill was talking about the microcosm of a macrocosm. What's the small, the smallest common denominator that he could work with? We know the big picture.
Okay, but we all know here. That, and we all do that, Utrice. We're
no,
talking
we
about moving.
We do not all do that. You see, this is one of the things that we can resolve, which is to deal with the facts and the reality of our lives. We have spent way too much time indulging in fantasy. And the facts don't support that fantasy. We have families that are in extreme distress for one reason, and that is there are no parents doing parental work. I mean, it sounds bizarre to say, but that's the truth.
Yes, that is
for
the truth. That is
reasons,
the truth.
They're not there. They're not available. They're not involved. They're not hands-on. And
that
they themselves are so stressed out, they could hardly manage day-to-day control of their households. And now we can add on to all the difficulties that arise out of that. Children not having proper supervision, going the wrong way, and so forth. We have to have these talks. We have to lay it out as it is. Not to indict anybody, but these are the facts.
Yeah, no, I'm not indicting anyone. And I just mentioned Bill because he started the conversation out and said that. Of course, it all starts in your own home. But there's very little we can do for the neighbor right next door who's in that situation you just said. I do what I can for my neighbor, but I can't go inside of his home or her home and tell her how to raise her children.
Nobody is suggesting that you do that. Everybody
right.
understands.
So take that off the table. That's not what we're talking about, Utrice. Please, let me finish my point. We are talking about creating a movement in this country that's going to project a progressive way of thinking going forward. We're not talking about problems.
Because we will never agree on what the word progressive means. We can't, we will have spent most of our productive time doing this unproductive work. What is a progressive? Who is a progressive? What is progressivism? It gets ridiculous. I'm saying, this is my history, okay? I'm telling you. I'm not interested in talking. I'm interested in doing.
You keep saying that. You're interested in doing. Doing
yes.
What exactly?
Well, I was interested
because I already do what Bill suggested. Not only do I do what Bill suggested, I also help the neighbor next door who doesn't have a man in her household with two kids, right? So I do that as well. Plus, I donate to whatever group that I can locally to try to help sustain them. So you don't want to talk. You want to do. So tell me, what do you want people to do? Because otherwise, we're just talking.
It's not what I want people to do. I made myself, I made a commitment to doing something very important, I thought. And it turned out to be quite important. I made my commitment. I didn't care whether people joined me or didn't join me or they donated, or I wasn't looking for any of that. I just knew that this is something I want to do. It could be done. People told me it can't be done, but I did it successfully. So I know that once you become serious about something and almost single-minded about it, chances are you will succeed. Not 100% of the time, but you would succeed more than you would fail. I just want to get on with the business of doing more doing, less talking.
Doing what? Doing what? You're still not being specific. Doing what?
Okay, I started a journalism training program. Right out of the blue.
You treat many are calling and fewer children.
Best training program in the state of New York.
Yes, I remember all of that.
Okay, great. That's what I did. I started a newspaper out of nowhere. It was quality journalism. Everything I try to do the best. No excuses for shoddy work.
And you have, Utrice, and you have many feathers in your cap. But that's not what I'm talking about.
But no, yes, we are talking about that, because in whatever field of endeavor you happen to be in, that you want to be involved in the community with, that is what we need. Top-notch commitment and people who are very serious and committed to what they're doing. That's what I'm talking about.
I think we have a lot of that around the country, Utrice. I just named a couple of groups. I mean, we have a lot of that. The problem is that we need to bring these groups together to be stronger. That's what I'm trying to say to you.
Let's not take on that burden of what we need to do.
But that's where you started the conversation. You asked the question, what should we do?
What they want to do. And let them, they already began something.
What should we do? That's what you asked.
Let them proceed.
Okay, I'm going to hang up, Utrice. I just want to say this to Gwen. Because I listened to the program last week.
Okay, we have to move on. We have to move on. We're out of time almost. So you'll talk to Gwen another day.
You have the right idea. Don't let nobody deter you from what you think.
Okay.
And that's all I want to say.
Thank you so much. We got to move on.
Bye-bye.
Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Utrice. How you doing?
Okay, Ed. How are you?
Me and my phone still here. Hanging on. You know, people really need to understand what a government is and what a government isn't. And that's the confusion. A government is a mechanism that people use to regulate, to provide for common defense, to promote the general welfare of a community, and to allocate funds and resources in a proper way. That's it. Your personal responsibility, your community responsibility, are obligations on yourself, depending upon the quality of life you want to have around you. But you want a government that is going to facilitate the end to those means. And that's it. I mean, you present a situation, you present a dilemma, you present a problem, You present a solution to the problem. You rally people around it. You elect a representative, and you put them up in the government to represent your interests. That's it. It isn't rocket science. It isn't brain surgery. You know, that's it. People look for government as religion. They look for government to qualify their values. They look for government to take care of their family. That's not what a government is for. And a government lacks when you don't actively participate in it. Vote, represent, demonstrate, educate. It's a vigilant and it's an ongoing process. And the quality of your life directly relates to how much effort you put into it. And you've got to learn personal responsibility. And that's what a lot of people, that call up this show, not indicting anybody. That's a lot of people that I talk to. They don't want to take any personal responsibility. They want to hand it over to somebody else and they complain when things don't work right. And nothing's what you get when nothing's what you do. That's it.
Amen. Can I say amen to what you just said? Even though we're not in church at the moment.
You can't blame everybody for everything. I mean, you get what you pay for. And even if the smallest thing you can do is locally, be consistent. And the smallest thing, if you've got an issue, focus on it. You understand what I'm saying? Just like you said about getting a broom and sweeping the street.
That's it.
That's it. I mean, come on. We come with these juvenile ideas and points of view, and then we're surprised that we got juveniles running the government. Because we're allowing the juveniles to take over. It's sad, but that's pretty much all I got for today.
All right. Thanks so much for your call today, for contributing. And that brings us to the end of our program today. No doubt we will continue this tomorrow, even as the voting goes on and we get updates as to who's winning so far. But really, that's not my major concern. As I said before, I'm not concerned whether Biden wins or Trump wins. I have a greater concern, which I said before. I have questions about both of them. And the questions have to do with what are the aggregate needs of what we consider our community. And is either one of them paying attention to that? Do they have a history of doing that? Or is it a recent history, as in a month ago, they started to develop a history? Let's watch this very carefully. So we're done for today. Let's come back to each other again tomorrow. Maybe we have some new ideas floating around in our noggins that we can exchange and talk about. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.